Hey there, welcome to The Butter Dish. I'm Natalie Delaney.
And I'm Heidi Ballard.
And today we're actually going to do our kind of first Q&A episode with kind of random-esque, but yet they all kind of link together. So we're going to actually go through about 9 questions you guys asked in the box. And we think that you'll really actually enjoy this episode. Pretty relevant and per the usual, you'll get some good stuff out of this. So we're just going to go through questions 1 through 9.
Okay. Number 1, why am I gaining weight after counting macros, calories, and exercising 5 days?
So my first thing would be to say that you can actually gain weight counting macros, calories, and exercising 5 days. Mm-hmm. Counting macros is just a more specific way to calorie count. So there's not necessarily, I think there's a, you know, idea that anytime you count macros, that means you're in a deficit, but people count macros to be in maintenance. People count macros to be in a surplus. Mm-hmm. So this really comes down to what are you doing? Like, as far as like, what are your macro targets, as well as what weight gain actually means whenever you do any of these phases. It can be glycogen stores. It could be added exercise. It could be stress. It could be water.
It could be muscle.
There's a lot of other reasons besides just fat that happens when the scale increases. So what you're going to want to look at is what are you targeting? What are your macros? Are you for sure in a deficit? If you feel like you are in a deficit, make sure you're checking your accuracy on MyFitnessPal. Make sure you're not adding your 5 days of exercise back in as calories into your MyFitnessPal. And also just kind of getting an idea of your overall biofeedback is where we probably recommend you start.
Absolutely. A couple more basics are making sure that you weigh yourself first thing in the morning before you eat or drink, but after you use the bathroom, and also use measurements. Then of course, always like the basics of making sure you're getting enough fiber and enough sleep, enough recovery time, all of those things.
And some people actually don't really realize this, but sometimes weighing just like on a Monday is actually not going to be your best weigh-in, especially if you come off a weekend, if they are historically a little bit hard for you. You definitely want to look at trends overall. So we'd recommend weighing at least 3 to 4 times a week just to give yourself an overall big picture of what's happening.
Right. Taking an average of those weights. Exactly. So, and track your data over time. If you see the trends heading in a direction that you're uncomfortable with, you have the variables to tweak that, whether that's increasing calorie output, reducing calories, whatever is going to get you closer to the goal that you have intended.
Fantastic. All right. Number 2, how's it possible to stay the same weight through a surplus, maintenance, and cut over 12 months?
Okay. So we were talking about this and we weren't sure if you meant like how to do it. Like, how can I do that? Which it's not really possible. Or if that happened to you, which is, I guess, same answer, also kind of not really possible. So when you say stay the same, of course, like we're kind of reading into your question a little bit here, assuming that you mean stay the same weight, which is really not possible, kind of unless you live in a vacuum, because there's so many variables that affect the scale and it fluctuates for everyone. So, but if you're increasing your calories, we would absolutely expect to see the scale go up. If you're maintaining, we would expect to see it fluctuate within a pretty similar range. And if you're cutting, we would expect the scale to go down, again, over time with, just like we mentioned a few minutes ago, like fluctuating or whatever, but the totality of the trends would be heading in one of those directions. If it's not, then there's something off. There's variables that you need to switch, whether it's, you know, you can adapt in a surplus. So then you're not in a surplus anymore. You can change your activity and you're not be in maintenance anymore. You can also not be accurate, or your overall, you know, steps or whatever, your overall movement can reduce. So you're not in a cut anymore. Like, these things aren't as clear cut sometimes as one might think.
And you also just remember that these 3 are phases: a surplus, maintenance, and a cut are all different kinds of phases designed to achieve different results. Surplus is generally used for either required weight gain or wanting to see muscle definition or development faster than in maintenance. Maintenance, you are exactly that, maintaining your weight. You're in your healthiest position here with your biofeedback as well as homeostasis. And a cut is to generally lose body fat. So you are in obviously a deficit in calories, which is going to make you feel different from being in a maintenance phase and a surplus phase. So they all have completely different intentions. It's kind of like the difference between saving money, spending exactly your budget, and then, you know, overspending.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it's like, you can't really have the same bank account number in all those 3 ranges. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that helps. All right.
Oh, yeah. That's always such a good analogy you use of like people trying to maintain their weight is trying to maintain a bank balance of like, you know, whatever, $152.73, no matter if you're going to Target, buying gas or whatever. It's like, that would be really difficult to maintain. Same thing kind of with your scale number, like your overall, the more specific the result you want, the more specific your behavior needs to be.
Well, it behooves us to tell you that like staying the same weight is actually kind of impossible no matter what.
Right.
To Heidi's point about the bank balance, you're always going to be a fluctuating range because you are a fluctuating person who is not the same day to day. So yeah. Hopefully you don't stay the same for 12 months. And if you do, you either need a new scale or we got to check you out.
Yeah, seriously. Okay. Number three, any tips for jumping back into macro counting?
So my assumption is that you're trying to get back into like a place where you can actually attempt a deficit. But in general, let's just talk about macro counting, where we actually would recommend that you actually start in maintenance. And so maintenance phase, the first thing to do to get back into macros, I guess, in any context, is to start tracking.
Yep.
That's obviously kind of like the meat and potatoes of macro counting, hence counting macros, meaning counting calories in a specific manner versus just calories, where you're, whether you're targeting protein and calories or all three, protein, carbs, and fat. That is like the essence of macro counting. So if you want to get back into it, the best place to start is by tracking.
Yeah. And really, you know, all the latest research supports just counting protein and calories, that there aren't exponential benefits to counting all three. So that's one way that is, you can simplify it, but regardless of what your intention is, whether you do want to cut, we really do encourage you to start maintenance and kind of get away from this January 1st mentality where you're trying to do all the healthy habits all at once. You want to start at a place that seems like very achievable, whether that's just starting to track breakfast and lunch or starting to track several days a week or whatever is easy for you. And then just kind of raise that bar gently over time, because trying to do all of the things, which there's a lot of habit stacking you can do with fitness goals, right? Like we just went through a bunch. There's counting calories, then there's counting protein and calories, then there's counting fiber. You know, you can really put a ton on your plate. Yeah, literally and metaphorically.
Well, and I think just like anywhere, like if you want to know where you're going to go, like if you're hoping to be in deficit or maintenance or in a surplus, you have to know where you're at before you can go anywhere.
Exactly.
And to Heidi's point, also part of jumping back into macros, quote unquote, is also making sure that you're set up for success. So assessing where you're at, assessing if you have time to attempt such a thing, you know, setting your friendship for success or getting back to those habits, that habit stacking that Heidi was talking about, those all lend yourself back there. So pick something that is like the easiest for you.
Yes.
Even if it's literally just like getting your steps or just getting back to your sleep or managing your stress levels, meditating, anything, all these healthy habits lend itself into having a successful stint in with counting macros. So
yeah.
Any of them.
Yeah.
Not necessarily all of them. Yeah. You don't jump back in with all of them. You just kind of piece by piece get there.
Exactly. If your healthy habits are stressing you out, then we want to reevaluate.
I like it.
See, we are on number four.
How do you know if you're lifting heavy enough to see body recomposition in maintenance? Okay, this is a great question. So mm-hmm. I'd like to actually frame it to, how do you know if you're lifting heavy enough to see body recomposition or long enough to see body recomposition in maintenance?
Yes.
So a lot of people get kind of, I think, a little disillusioned by recomp and maintenance. I think they believe that just lifting for a couple months in maintenance, all of a sudden they'll have this body recomposition. Now you have to remember that the word body recomp means you're literally taking your existing composition and changing it, which generally means adding more muscle and losing fat. So if you're lifting heavy enough, Heidi, you want to go over like RIR and reps in reserve?
Yeah. So really, it's not like, you know, based on your specific size or height, that there's like a weight that you quote should be lifting, close quote. It's really based on, they haven't found a better way to measure what's heavy enough than the rate of perceived exertion. So if it's heavy for you, then that's what we're looking for. You want to be finishing a set with, you know, maybe 1 to 3 reps left in the tank. Something around 70-75%. So that should be a pretty good working set level of challenge. But yeah, to Nat's point, there's lifting heavy enough, there's lifting often enough, and there's lifting long enough, because you really want to be thinking about it. I mean, think about anything you see in the natural world that has changed over time is as an adaptation. These things these things take time, right? So you are going to see these genetic anomalies all over the place. There's also newbie gains, but what is, you know, you kind of have to, we can appreciate those things, but they don't always necessarily translate to everybody. So keeping your eyes on your own your own paper and progressing at a rate that works for you.
And also making sure that you understand like the concept of recomp as well as lifting heavy, making sure that your programming is intelligent, making sure that you're eating enough or even in a slight surplus. There is going to be an upper limit to body recomp and maintenance as well. It's not possible to really achieve like these crazy, like let's just say like bodybuilder results just in a maintenance
phase. Exactly.
You're going to have to at one point get a little bit uncomfortable, add a little bit of calories back in to calories into your intake to be able to like use the energy to be able to build muscle mass in a way to see, to really physically see it. I think a lot of people think that, oh, I'll just lift heavy. You will look better. You'll absolutely improve like the quality of your composition. But as far as like profound amounts of muscle will require a really long time.
Yep.
And then
Once
again, it really comes down to like this, your subjective objective assessment of yourself. We already have a subjective one, objective assessment of yourself, because a lot of times you're going to be looking to see things that you might not see. Generally, the places you don't really care to see stuff, you'll see it first in a body recomp situation.
Yes.
Versus the where you would like to. So.
Just giggling over objective assessment versus subjective obsession. Yes.
And that's not to be discouraging, but I think there's definitely a lot of misinformation out there as far as like what builds muscle, how fast it takes to build muscle, how much you can see in a short amount of time. And really it comes down to, if you've been lifting intelligently for a couple of years, you will probably see what you're looking for, but it's definitely not like an 8-week challenge.
Yeah. Well, and just to speak to that for a minute, I mean, if you're feeling super impatient, I mean, obviously we want everybody to have the pieces in place to get the best results possible, right? We're all about that. But if this is something that you're feeling this incredible urge to hurry and fix, like hurry and fix your body, hurry and change things, that's definitely an energy you want to check, because the process and how the process feels actually really does lend itself to the results. Like a stressed out, overproducing, never resting, you know, rush to the finish line. Not only does that mindset prevent you from actually seeing and appreciating and enjoying your results, it's going to lead to a burnout where, you know, like we're saying, it takes a long time to sustain and build these results. You're not going to make it for the long haul. If that's the sort of mentality that you're approaching it with.
To me, like body recomposition maintenance is kind of like wanting to like remodel your house, but with your current budget, like you're going to have to slowly do it, whether like you buy like a new vase or you buy a new rug, but it's like, you're slowly going to be piecing it together instead of just like pushing all this, like, you know, money into a remodel, like you would into like a surplus phase. So just kind of keep that in mind. It's like, I'm basically just slowly building in, you know, a lengthy amount of time to like my physique.
Well, and I love that, because it's also, just in that example alone, I think you know, or have experienced yourself the energy of like, oh, that's not really enough to make a difference. And I don't really like it. And I'm not happy with it, versus like, oh, I love these little details. It like enhances the overall feeling that I have here. And wherever your focus is, if your focus is on what you lack versus on what you have, right? That's, you know, that's obviously going to change how you feel.
To continue with the analogy, especially since you just went through a huge remodel, is that like, you know, it can feel really good to do it in small bits, or it can feel really good to do it in like large amounts. But either way, there's going to be some like pushback a little bit.
Dude, for sure. Yeah. There's like, some sacrifice.
Like demoing your kitchen and going into a surplus is going to have some kind of cost, right? Same kind of thing. Like you're not going to eat out of your kitchen for like a couple months, but you'll get the kitchen you want faster, right?
Exactly.
So it's the same kind of idea when it comes to any kind of body composition change.
Right. And not to do the analogy to death, but let's do it anyways, is like you can engage in a remodel with a specific, you know, thinking you know what you're in for, or thinking you know how long it'll take, and there's all kinds of surprises awaiting you, right? Like how many clients have we had start a cut and they're, you know, the insane stresses of all time like descend upon their life, you know, like things just don't always work out as planned.
Well, and not to be another like, you know, plot twist, there's discomfort either way.
Exactly.
So pick your discomfort, right?
Right.
All right, going right into 5, which kind of goes into 4, deload week, lower the weights or same weight but fewer reps. So deload weeks can look whatever way you want them to. Mm-hmm. Both of those are fine answers, or you can literally do none of those and just walk, swim, relax. The whole point of a deload week is to reduce, it's basically like a vacation from your programming. So if lowering the weight feels really good to you, go for it. If you're doing the same weight, but fewer reps feels good to you, also go for it. But the whole point is to not do the same as you would from the prior.
I guess I'm just so excited to be in your presence. Everything is funny, but I thought you were going to say a vacation from your problems. Oh, what about Bob?
Oh my gosh.
Yes. That too.
Deload week means more time between sets on TikTok and Instagram is really what deload week means.
Maybe we need to schedule emotional deload weeks as well.
I think deload weeks are also really important. Heidi and I were not believers in deload weeks until we worked with Jordan Lips and we're like, deload week? No, only wusses take deload weeks. Like,
or people who were there whatever. Yeah.
And now we're like, is it a deload week yet?
I think it's been 4.2 weeks.
So just like you would treasure a vacation from your work or your regular life, use that as a deload
week. Yeah, deload weeks every 6 to 8.
Right. They should feel really good. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to earn one.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Okay. And they're great for your results also.
1000%.
Okay. So.
Just like rest days and sleep.
Yes. Okay. And.
Hence the exact word deload, like take the load off, take a load off, take your shoes off, take your socks off, just like give yourself a couple of days to breathe and know that this is also benefiting your results. Like Heidi was saying, generally you actually come back from a deload in a better position to PR and to increase the weights.
Yeah, it's very true. I can bear my testimony of this. Okay. What is, Natalie, number 6.
Okay.
What is /are your favorite maintenance breakfast?
Well, considering I eat the same breakfast, no matter what phase I'm in, I'm not much help here. However, this is a fantastic question because I think this question makes me believe that you believe that there is a right way to do maintenance, especially in a breakfast scenario. And the answer is, what would you like to eat?
Yes. And again, we're basing a lot of these questions on the coaching experience we have. So if you're the one that asked this question, you're like, wait, that's not what I meant. I just mean, I want really good recipes. Like, you know, that exists too, but it does also, we have seen this in a lot of clients before where they just like in a cut where you are trying to eat sort of offset meals that are high in protein, low in carb, low in fat. You're trying to eat high volume. You're trying to, you know, maximize everything out of your meals. Sometimes we can take that energy into maintenance, and maintenance is really, it's a place where you can be a lot more flexible and you can eat in ways that you like. And it's a way to bring like, marry the lifestyle that you had before with what you've learned in, about, you know, how eating high protein or eating these different ways makes you feel. You can bring some of that, but you don't have to eat like that all the time anymore. That was just for a specific phase.
Right.
Right. So what, like I love oatmeal. That would be probably, and I mean, that's definitely my ADHD hyper-focus breakfast of all time. I love it.
Well, and maintenance is like the place where you bring a little bit more enjoyment into your maybe cutting breakfast. So let's say, for instance, you're used to having like 5,000 cups of egg whites, maybe crack like a whole egg in, just to kind of increase the fats, increase, you know, some palatability, maybe add a little bit more cheese, maybe cook with butter. Oatmeal to your point, but your oatmeal will have, you know, maybe brown sugar and whole milk in it versus Fairlife or, you know, maybe have some coffee creamer in your coffee versus like, you know, fat-free milk or whatever you're doing.
You can have a whole sandwich instead of like, you know, eating it open-faced or all, whatever, you know,
these different tactics. One of the mistakes that people make in maintenance a lot is that they treat a maintenance phase like a dieting phase with just more calories. And we want to make sure that like you realize that that is not what that is, because it's really easy to get burned out in maintenance when you try to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, make sure that you're being good to yourself in maintenance. This is what life is. Mm-hmm. So if there's a breakfast you really enjoy, like, I mean, I would love me like a piece of French toast or some chocolate chip pancakes. Like those are favorite maintenance breakfasts.
Yeah. It's like kind of exploring this whole world of food, seeing what's worth it to you, seeing what different things cost, seeing what maintenance serving sizes are like, with the intention of being able to be a little bit more flexible with your intake.
Now let's go into like a super inflexible question. Okay. Number 7.
Yeah.
Whole foods, limiting grains, hard to hit carbs. How much sugar is too much per day? So we're going to once again read right into this kind of question. In our program, we see this a lot. People want to rewrite their whole entire food palette because they have a belief that restricting is the way to success. Mm-hmm. And ironically, it's totally not.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, I mean, just I mean, you mentioned this earlier, when we were making the questions, like hard to, if it's hard to hit, you're limiting grains and it's hard to hit your carbs because you're eating whole foods, that, I mean, there's an issue right there. Like maybe we want to loosen up on that rule so that it isn't so hard to hit your carbs. But the real question is why? I mean, if you have dietary issues, you know, intolerances, those kinds of things, totally make sense. But if this is like a
belief that carbs are bad for you, carbs make you fat, yeah, reducing your carbs will make you lose weight faster. It, you know, the statement, how much sugar is too much per day, makes me believe that you would like to have some.
Yes. And also that I'm trying to think of a way to say this, like it sounds like there might be a little bit of you assigning morality to food, which there's a lot of that out there in the world that, like, you know, somehow eating clean or eating in these different ways, like, is more enlightened somehow. Or will, like you said, like will give you activate some sort of special result. And this is something that gets brought up consistently. I mean, like the 7 years we've been doing this.
Absolutely. 6 years. So I guess our question to you would be like, what is your intention behind what you are doing? And if it does seem really, really taxing to figure out a way to hit your carbs while doing whole foods and limiting grains, just count calories then.
Yeah.
Because when you try to do too many things, you really can't do anything.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of, just going to say it, like people who try to do like faster way to fat loss when you're doing intermittent fasting, you know, nutrient timing, carb cycling, macro counting. I don't even know what else.
Eating clean,
yeah, like all sorts of things. It's like, so what's left?
Yeah.
So yeah, you probably will lose weight if you can't have any.
Yeah.
But how sustainable is this for you? If you wonder how much sugar is too much per day and you like having some form of sugar, have some sugar. The whole foods limiting grains and like not hitting your carbs and limiting sugar will not get you better results than just moderately eating the things that you enjoy. 80-20,
yeah,
finding things that, like, you know, that fill your carbohydrates, because carbohydrates are energy. They're also important if you do care about losing muscle, or if you happen to be a cardio junkie, also important. Carbohydrates are, carbs are just important in general.
Yeah.
So if you are also struggling hitting your carbs, you're going to feel a lot more fatigued. You'll feel a lot more imbalanced and you'll have a lot more brain fog. A lot less energy. So
yeah, I guess I would kind of make a parallel here between this and the rate of perceived exertion thing. I would really, ultimately, we just want to know how this style of eating feels to you. And if it feels good and you like it and you like how you feel on it, fantastic. But if you're feeling a little deprived, a little stressed out, a little restricted, if you're worried or feeling like you have some kind of like obsessive tendencies about it, that's definitely something that you want to look at. These are all things that are we're wanting to utilize to improve our quality of life, not reduce it.
All right. Number 9, female, approximately 22% body fat, just ended 4 months slow cut, 10 pounds to go. How long before I can cut again? So my first question to you would be, how do you know you need to lose 10 pounds?
Yes.
I think we have these arbitrary numbers that we like to get to, that we have a belief attached to them, or that we think we have to be this certain weight. So that's the first thing I would challenge you on is, do you really even need to lose 10 pounds? Mm-hmm. Now, if you would like to lose 10 pounds, the general rule of thumb is that you want to be in maintenance approximately the same amount of time you were in a deficit. So 4 months. And if that seems incredibly intense, just know that you could either return to your previous cutting numbers. You might have to shave them 5 or 10%, just get some more movement depending on how adherent you were. As you said, it was a slow cut. So that makes me believe maybe, well, actually, I don't know. I'm not going to even read into that because I know a lot of different things. But yeah, you can shave your calories, or you can go back to your previous cutting numbers and be a little bit more adherent to them or consistent with them. Maybe if you weren't, I'm not sure what made it slow, whether it was the percentage of a deficit you were in, or just it took a long time to get the initial amount of weight off. It can go either way.
Yeah. I would just say that, I mean, this is a great range to be in. And I'm definitely not telling you can't or shouldn't cut, but heading into the holidays and whatnot, it may be a great opportunity to practice some body acceptance and maintaining. I mean, there's all kinds of research that shows like maintaining your weight loss is way more of an achievement than actually losing more weight. So, but to each his own.
Right. And once again, we see this a lot. A lot of times those last 10 pounds is mostly a body composition change you want to see more than it is pounds on a scale.
Exactly.
Most people who are chasing 2 to 3 more or 5 more, mm-hmm. or even up to 10, a lot of it is because they're not seeing on their physique what they'd like to see. Losing 10 more pounds will just literally give you exactly what you look like now, but like maybe a titch smaller.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yes.
And so that is something just to consider when you are spending, especially if this is like the last 10, it's going to be incredibly difficult to get those last 10. And then also just remember in context, you know, about 22% body fat is actually just very subjective as well.
Totally. So. Totally.
And then this big one, this is a good one. We're probably going to spend a decent amount of time here, but it's a good question.
I feel like I will never stop binging.
I'm less frequent. But
yes. Any tips?
So it's less, she's less frequently binging, but she's still binging.
Gotcha.
So what are your tips for binging?
So the first thing, I mean, if this was a client that we were talking to, we would want to know, what do you mean by binging and how often are we talking about? And, you know, because it's often, there's two main themes there, not that there couldn't be more, but there's typically two main themes with this. Number one, you've been restricting for so long and so often and so severely that what you say is binging or overeating is actually your body just trying to catch up, you know, like 1200 or 1400, I mean, depending on, you know, depending on all your specific situation. We definitely recommend that you, if you're counting, start counting in maintenance. And that's your target. A lot of times to compensate for this, people start to go, they want to do the repentance dieting thing. Like, I binged last night, so now I'm going to eat super low today. But that only keeps this pendulum swing, this all or nothing swinging, continuing.
Well, do yourself a favor and give yourself some context, because if you're still in like a maintenance calorie range, you're not really binging.
Yeah.
You're actually just eating what your body requires and what your body needs. And a lot of times people use this language and it actually just makes them do habits or actions that they feel are less desirable. In reality, it could just be your eating.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if this means, and obviously, we're not your coaches, but we would definitely love to ask you some questions, the context of it. It's like, does binging just mean that you're eating things that you wouldn't usually eat?
Yeah. Or that you think are naughty.
You think are naughty, or you mm-hmm. think are bad, or you think they're not good for you. Or you're eating off script.
Yes.
That what, you know, it's like, oh, I had pizza today, even though I'm not supposed to have pizza. So therefore I binged today. It's like, but you didn't, you just had pizza.
Yes.
And so I think figuring out what that means to you, what binging, just to define binging, because we also have like a very real clinical eating disorder, binge mm-hmm. eating. And then we also just have people who believe binging just means eating more than I usually do.
Yeah. Oftentimes there's an emotional component here too, where, you know, you shame yourself so much for binging that, you know, that's not the person you want to be. You feel like you shouldn't be doing it. You're so hard on yourself that also keeps the cycle going. There could also be some scarcity themes where you feel like, you know, there's never enough. You're scared you won't have another chance.
Last supper mentality.
Exactly. So, and a lot of times it is also a stress management issue of like you're overwhelmed. Your nervous system is dysregulated. You're looking for the quickest, fastest way to feel better. And food does do that. Food sends relieving chemicals throughout your body. So eating to feel better is a very real short-term solution for your brain. So diversifying the ways that you feel good, building in self-care, like whatever that means to you, like what Nat mentioned earlier, walking, meditating, calling a friend, journaling, you know, trying different avenues of soothing and bringing yourself back into a balanced place. Definitely would recommend listening to the stress management episode, because again, there's a lot of overlap between everything that we just said. It's probably not just one of those things. It's probably a lot of those things combined.
And kind of to Heidi's point and to add on to it a little bit, like whenever we binge anything, whether it's Netflix, we go on shopping sprees, or we're doom scrolling or anything.
Or gossip even can be, exactly. You know,
it's definitely used to kind of either avoid something mm-hmm. or to, as an answer to something that we just experienced. So kind of, you know, coming back to be like, what is it that generally, like if you feel like you will never stop, there's something that's happening that's constantly reoccurring in your life that you probably need to look at and address. address. And that's definitely helpful if you have a coach who has different eyes on you. You can ask a friend or a loved one if they happen to notice any kind of trends that you project, or, you know, seeing a therapist will also be helpful.
Absolutely.
You can stop binging.
Yes.
We absolutely know you can, but it's more about being willing to address what is making you feel that like you need to.
Yeah. So exactly what Matt said, whether that's paying attention to yourself, you know, whenever this happens, ask yourself questions like, what was going on for me, you know, a couple hours before that, journaling your feelings, and maybe even try tracking, giving a rough estimate of what you ate to even see if you're maybe being overly harsh on yourself, or, you know, there's a lot of different tactics that you can do, but really at the end of the day, you want to start paying attention to yourself and how you feel, asking yourself questions and trying to be as curious, not judgmental. There's a huge difference there. Even just like, what if we could just suspend judgment on this for just a second? And, you know, if this was your daughter, sister, friend telling you this story, what questions would you ask them? Oh my gosh, what was going on? Or it's okay. Like trying to kind of tease out the story or what's going on in your thinking or in your eating behaviors, that, because like Nat said, we 100% know that you can come back from this. The question is, just building awareness around it. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to throw one last dark horse question in. Supplements and breastfeeding, BCAAs, pre-workout, et cetera.
So we definitely, number one, ask your doctor for sure.
Yeah. Everyone has, sure, as you've discovered, everyone has lots of different opinions on what you should do when you're a mother, when you're about to be a mother, what happens after you're a mother, what you're doing when you're breastfeeding, when you're not breastfeeding. So I think it, you know, obviously err on your own judgment and the judgment of your professional. Especially because they're, you know, BCAAs and pre-workout, there's such a large gamut of different kinds of supplements. So it'd be hard to be like, sure, all of them.
Yeah.
Because obviously some have stimulants in there and other things like that. We want to make sure that you obviously take the best possible things for you while you're nursing. Good luck.
Yes, absolutely.
If these questions were helpful, this is literally what we do all the time in our coaching program. We have office hours 3 times a week where you can come and actually ask these live. And instead of us assuming,
we can actually clarifying questions.
Exactly, clarifying questions. And also to kind of get deeper and more personal with you. So if that is something you're interested in, we do run a group coaching program as well as private coaching. And we have information on our website, www.betteryourmacros.com. Hopefully this Q&A was helpful. See you guys on the next episode.
Whew, you made it. The butter dish didn't melt your face.
Thanks so much for hanging with us. If you enjoyed that episode, we'd love it if you would subscribe, share it to your social media, or leave a comment. That all really helps, so the kids say. If you want to find us, you can find us at Instagram at @butteryourmacros.
On the web at butteryourmacros.com.
Twitter and TikTok at @WhatsApp Butters. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks.